Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We were discussing first how the Lord is not subject to the six kinds of changes that everything material is subject to. Then yesterday we were reading how he's also not appearing as the result of any of the four kinds of results of activity. And we have here the section of Srila Jiva Goswami's Harinam Vyakarana that discusses just this. This is the definition of the grammatical object given in the Karaka Prakarana. The sutra reads, Kriya yat sadhika tat karma. That which the kriya achieves is called the karma. Kriya means the activity. It's expressed by a verb. What the activity achieves is called the karma or the object. Now, Jiva Goswami explains in his notes to his own sutra, that karaka for the achievement or the sadhana of which the kriya proceeds is called the karma or the object. Regarding the word sadhika, that's the word in the sutra, the kriya is treated as the karta here. Well, that means that in this, kriya is the subject of the sutra as a sentence. I'll skip the sentence. The Kalapa grammarians, that's a different system of grammar, say, yat kriyate tat karma. The karma is that which is done. The object is what is done. In regard to what was said earlier, sadhana, or achievement, that's the achievement that takes place by the activity, the kriya, in any of five particular ways. Okay, so there's five listed here. One, achievement through the karmas being utpadya, or produced. Achievement through the karmas being vikarya, or transformed. Achievement through the karmas being samskariya, or enhanced. Achievement through the karmas being prapya, or attained. And achievement through the karmas being tyajya, or abandoned. So this fifth one is added by Jiva Goswami. These are Jiva Goswami's own words in the Harinam Vyakarana. So he's not just throwing around grammatical terminology to be impressive. He wrote the book. He wrote the textbook on grammar. Okay, we're continuing. Taduktam nitya vyakto pi bhagavan ikshyate nija shaktitaha iti. This is also said in the words, although the personality of Godhead is eternally unmanifest, he can be seen with the help of his energies. Okay? What does that say? He's unmanifest, but he's seen by his energies. Okay. Nanu, Sri Bhagavata Udavam Prati Vasudevo Bhagavata Itiadikam Vibhuti Madhye Ganayitva Sarvante Mano Vikara Evaite Ityuktam. So here's Purvapaksha, objection. But in speaking to Uddhava, the Supreme Lord counted his personal form among his material opulences when he spoke the words beginning, among those entitled to the name of Bhagavan, I am Vasudeva. And at the very end of this he said, Manovikara evaite, these are all just mental transformations. Okay, so someone's trying to argue Krishna himself said his own body is material. Satyam tadgananam prachurya vivakshaya chatrino gachanti iti vat. Yes, but this inclusion, that means including even himself among the vibhutis, the material opulences, was by way of describing something in terms of what is prominent, similar to the expression the umbrella carriers walk by. Chhatra is umbrella. Chhatri is person with umbrella. And there's in the play, there's a stage direction. The umbrella carriers walk by. It's understood that there's other people coming, proceeding on the stage who aren't carrying umbrellas. But the umbrellas stand out. So they're only mentioned. The people carrying umbrellas, and some other people not carrying umbrellas also. But the umbrella carriers are prominent in that crowd. So like that, all these material vibhutis, and then he puts himself in there. He's not a material vibhuti, but he's listing himself among them. That doesn't make him one of them. And in the same passage of the Bhagavad Gita, Tatraivahi, Prithivi Vayurakasha. Same part of the Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Prithivi Vayurakasha. Apo Jyotir Aham Mahan. Vikarak Purusho Vyaktam. Rajak Satvam Tadatamak Param. Tamak Param. Ityatra parashabdena brahmapi tanmadye ganitamasti. And in the same passage that the Purvapaksha refers to, where Krishna says, among the Vasudevs, among the Bhagavans, I'm Vasudev. Krishna also says this, I am form, taste, aroma, touch, and sound. False ego, the Mahatattva, earth, water, fire, air, and sky. I'm the living entity, material nature, the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, and the supreme. All these items, along with knowledge of their individual symptoms, and the steady conviction that results from this knowledge, represent me. That's Krishna's words. Now, in this statement, by the word pada, the supreme truth is also counted among these opulences. Okay, so it doesn't make the supreme truth material. Krishna's all of those things. He's some material things. He's some spiritual things also. Tadevam praptir nishidha. Thus, acquisition, that one kind of result of an activity, is also denied. He doesn't obtain his body. It's always there. As iterated here, the Supreme Lord can be realized only when his internal energies, who constantly attend him and protect him from intrusions by the envious, when those internal energies are pleased to reveal him to a faithful devotee. Naham prakashak sarvasya yogamaya samavita. Krishna says, I'm not revealed to everybody. To some, but not to everybody. My yogamaya covers me. So this energy, covering energy, is in a sense protecting Krishna from intrusion. Krishna doesn't want to be bothered, or his energies don't want to bother Krishna with the offenses that are going to be committed by materialists. Krishna can be available for everybody, but those who want to go near him have to be able to approach him without offenses, not to commit offenses against him or his other devotees. Otherwise, it just spoils the mood of Krishna's pleasure. And the one who's committing offenses doesn't benefit from being close to Krishna in such an attitude. So therefore, his energies cover him, keep him invisible, unseen by the envious and unqualified. Yogamaya samavrita. But they're pleased to reveal Krishna to a faithful devotee. Krishna is thus swayam jyotihi, self-luminous. Well, does that mean that he's like a light bulb that's turned on all the time? Then everybody can see. Why can't everybody see Krishna if he's turned on like a light bulb all the time? Swayam jyoti. But that really means that he is known by his chosen agents only, not by any material endeavor. He's revealed by himself, but really it's through his energies. And those same energies that reveal him to those who are fit to see conceal him from others. A doubt is raised as to whether Krishna did not identify himself among the material opulences of the Supreme in his instructions to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Here is the actual verse. Vasudevo Bhagavatam Tvam tu Bhagavateshvam Kim Purushanam Hanuman Vidyadranam Sudarshanaha. Among those entitled to the name Bhagavan, I am Vasudeva, and indeed you, Uddhava, represent me among the devotees. I am Hanuman, among the Kim Purushas, and among the Vidyadharas, I am Sudarshana. Now, after mentioning many of the Supreme's Vibhutis, Krishna concluded, at the end of the chapter, Etaste katitak sarve sankshepena vibhutayaha mano vikara evaite yata vacha vidyate. The opulences which I've described to you are all only mental creations, figuratively identified with the Supreme. They represent Krishna, but they're not identical with him. They're his energies and none different from him. But he is different from them, his material opulences. You can maybe begin to appreciate Krishna by understanding his material, by being attracted to his material opulences and understanding that they're his energies. But just worshiping these material objects, the shark, the lion, and so on, is not devotional service. If you worship the lion or the shark in ignorance, you're practicing religion in the mode of ignorance, and it won't make you Krishna conscious. Anyway, continuing. Srila Jiva Goswami explains in his Krama Sandarbha, commentary on this verse spoken by Krishna in the 11th canto, the second one, Etas tu kriti manovikara evaite. Srila Jiva Goswami, in the Krama Sandarbha, explains that just as a person empowered to represent a king may also come to be called king. Well, in Sanskrit you can do that. In English you'd call him the viceroy or the representative. But in Sanskrit you can use the word raja more loosely, even to refer to the representative of the king. But only by stretching the meaning of the term. Because he's not really the king. He's just an agent of the king. So also, the Supreme's material opulences are figuratively identified with him. Is Krishna, the personality of Godhead, also one of these material opulences of the impersonal Supreme? No. He, Krishna, does not literally mean to include himself among his own vibhutis. Vibhutis means material opulence. Rather, Krishna is speaking the same way as a stage direction in a drama, which announces the umbrella carriers walk by. This means that there is a movement of some people carrying umbrellas, along with other people without umbrellas. Krishna similarly appears among, this is not London in the rain, this is a king's entourage, or maybe several kings, and each of them has his umbrella. Only a king can have a white umbrella, not ordinary people, even if it's raining. They can have black umbrellas, but not white ones. And the impersonal Brahman listed by Krishna among his vibhutis is not really a material vibhuti, impersonal Brahman. It's actually Krishna himself, not a separate being. The Supreme Lord is discovered not by exercise of mental power, but by his grace alone, realized either partly in his forms of impersonal Brahman and of Paramatma in the heart, or in his fullness as Bhagavan. Krishna is understood by his grace. He reveals himself. So when he's describing his vibhutis, his material opulences, okay, to Krishna, to Arjuna in the Gita, or to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita, this is a way of revealing himself on a certain level. If we understand that Krishna says that he's the lion, and we meditate on that, then that's Krishna conscious. But if we just meditate on lions, not even knowing that Krishna identified himself, or not even thinking that this is Krishna's opulence, then it's just material to think about lions. Yes?
Roji, here two sentences are made here. That these are the opulences of impersonal Brahman.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Like, why it has to be opulence of impersonal Brahman?
I think Krishna said that. Let me check.
How impersonal Brahman can have opulence?
Oh, because Brahman may be impersonal, It may be formless, but it is the origin of all forms. Brahman is understood as the supreme truth from which everything is derived. It can do that because it's really Krishna. And Krishna contains all qualities and everything is within him. But he can act impersonally. Maya idam, maya tatam idam sarvam jagat. Avyaktamurtina. I pervade this whole world in my impersonal form. And in the Brahma Samhita, what is it? All the opulences are coming from Brahman. Ashesha vibhuti binnam. How does that begin? Tad Brahma nishkalam. All the universes are expanding from Brahman. Brahman you can understand as manifesting impersonally as the pradhana. From Brahman comes the pradhan, the material, total material nature. But that is coming from the absolute truth. Material nature is not its, you know, Krishna is anadir adir, the beginning of everything, and he has no beginning. But you can't say that about material nature. Material nature is eternal, but she has a source. She's derived from the Supreme. And because she, the pradhan, the energy is impersonal, you can understand it being derived from the impersonal aspect of the Supreme.
Listed by Krishna amongst
yes.
Vibhuti is actually himself, not
yes,
a separate
is.
Separate being.
Yes.
Like I'm wondering why, if Krishna says this is a mental creation, what is the necessity of saying these? This is for our level or like
saying which the last statement you read?
No, I'm saying the whole thing, like, you know, Krishna listing these are my opulences.
Yes.
And Krishna says these are all mental creations. They're not actually.
Well, that is the material opulence is on the list. But there's a few exceptions. He put himself on the list. He put his Brahman feature on the list. They are not manovikara. Whose mind created Brahma? You know, it's not a mental creation.
Yeah. So, but all these things which we see, the lion or etc., they're all real. So, what
yeah, but they're not really real. The real lions are in the spiritual world. There's some jiva sitting in a lion body and he thinks he's a lion. That could be me in my next life. You know? But I'm not a lion. I it's like putting on a costume, you know, a lion costume, and I think I pretend to be a lion. It's a make-believe lion. All the lions in the material world are make-believe lions, like stuffed dolls. All the everythings in the material world are make-believe. They're not the real. The real ones are somewhere else.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just this, the example of umbrella carrier, I could not understand it. The example of an umbrella carrier in the stage,
yes. Oh.
I could not understand it clearly. Can you explain?
Oh, it means that this is a figurative use of language. To be literal, you'd have to say, the umbrella carriers and also some other people walk on the stage. But you can figuratively just say the umbrella carriers enter. Or another example, please keep the yogurt safe from the crows. If I give you that instruction, that doesn't mean you can let the rats eat the yogurt. You know, it's understood. You want the other animals also to be kept away. But all I tell you is keep it away from the crows. And I say, okay, where's the yogurt? Oh, that's okay, I gave it to the rats. That doesn't fulfill the intention of the speaker. Oh, how is it connected? That these are all my material opulences. Well, that means most of them are my material opulences. Like most of the people on the stage are carrying umbrellas, or some of them are. But there are exceptions. Vasudev's an exception. Brahman's an exception. Okay. Yeah. Yes.
About cows.
Cows.
Cows. Do they belong to the category of vibhuti, do they...
Where? Are they mentioned here?
No, they're not mentioned there, but I'm just wondering, because you mentioned lions and sharks, do we consider cows to be inherently transcendental, or they're just material animals, but somehow or other they came to be dear to Krishna, even though material beings, material bodies?
Yeah, cows are pious.
And worshiping cows doesn't give any spiritual benefit to a person, just a pious activity. Worshipping cows in Vrindavan as opposed to worshipping them in the West. In other words, just complicated.
Well, wow. It depends on your consciousness. Cows are auspicious and pious. Even ordinary cows. Even cows in Europe. You know, some Indians argue that the cows in Europe and other countries are not cows, they're pigs. Yeah. They're only Indian cows because they have the dewlap of real cows. But a cow is auspicious. I think even the European cows. It's an auspicious birth. A living entity must have become free from its sinful reactions to rise up to the form of a cow after being a dog or a pig. So it's always it's good karma to be associated with cows and to serve the cows, even ordinary cows. But that's karmic. That's not spiritual. It's sattvic. Cows are sattvic. General sense. But then if you're talking about the cows in Vrindavan and you're in the transcendental mood of meditating how these are Krishna's cows, then that's different. That becomes spiritual. Because your consciousness is spiritual. Even if you're looking at a material cow, you're seeing something spiritual. The cow may be material, but your awareness is spiritual. So you get the spiritual benefit. Just like there's that song, prayer, about being on the bank of the Reva, and I'm the same girl and he's the same lover. That wasn't written about Radha and Krishna. It was written by a mundane poet. Rupa Goswami commented on it, explaining it in a transcendental way. And Lord Chaitanya was in ecstasy to hear that verse. He would chant it in front of Jagannath at the Jagannath festival, the Radha festival. Because the devotee is called Vyaja. There's a material description, but the Vaishnavas, the pure Vaishnavas, see it spiritually. Lord Chaitanya sees an ordinary sand dune and thinks it's Govardhan Hill. So you can see an ordinary cow, but think it's Krishna's cow. Your benefit is spiritual.
So in other words, when Jiva Goswami mentions in his commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that cows could be worshipped in three ways, scratching their neck, giving them grass and circumambulating them, he means that one has to be in a proper state of consciousness, and one cannot, if just he happens to scratch a head, a neck of a cow without knowing.
To get the full spiritual benefit, you still get pious benefit, you get good karma, even to approach a cow and respect it and serve it, even on the, with no further understanding, and it's just an ordinary cow.
But it won't be bhakti mukhi sukriti, it will be just sukriti, right?
No, it's good, it's sattvic behavior, it's not bhakti.
Unlike, for instance, if somebody happens to chant Krishna's name without knowing what it is, he gets bhakti and mukhi sukriti, he gets exposed.
Because Krishna's name is directly Krishna, right. It's not a vibhuti. Yeah. Anyway, I was told that if you see cows by themselves on top of Govardhan Hill, nobody's with them, especially white cows, that means that Krishna and Balaram are there, they're tending them, but you can't see them. Okay.
Anything else?
Yes.
Ruji, this is not related directly to the topic, but you just said that Rupa Goswami...
I'll entertain it this time, but we should try to keep the questions relevant in this class, because otherwise we will lose the track. We're trying to stay online. But go ahead. Go ahead.
So you mentioned that Rupa Goswami... he just took one of the song of somebody has composed, and he used it for Krishna.
Yes.
So
Lord Chaitanya also saw it that way.
So shall we also use some mundane songs in Krishna's service?
No. That's the prerogative. That is something that a devotee fully situated in prema can do. The whole world becomes spiritual for him. Because he's got purely spiritual vision. But it doesn't work as a preaching tactic. That we're going to, you know, just play the sing the regular songs. You can transform the songs into something about Krishna, but just to sing the regular songs and pretend they're spiritual, forget it. You won't, you know, will become degraded, and those who are already degraded won't be improved. Okay? All right. Let's go to the next paragraph. 57.7. Atta vikritir api tush apakaranen avagatena vrihinam iv opadya pakaranena bhavet tad asangatvat nasambhavet ityaha mukta upaditaha iti. So, as for modification, that's one of the other four, the four kinds of result of activity, vikara, or modification. The example that was given was turning yogurt, milk into yogurt. That's a vikara. Anyway, here's the technical explanation of what modification is. As for modification, it occurs by the removal of imaginary features, like the removal of husks from grains of rice by threshing. Imaginary features again, upadis, false designations. I guess like you take a conditioned soul and you turn him into a pure devotee by removing his misunderstandings and his bad behavior. That's a kind of modification. Now that is not possible in the Supreme Lord because he has no casual connections. Casual connections, as is expressed in the phrase, free from material designations. Now, what do I mean by a casual connection? Not causal. I thought maybe causal, but no, it's casual. Casual means not formal. Because this is again from Nyaya philosophy. I hope I explained this in the commentary. Sambandha can be of different kinds. Sambandha means a relationship, or let's say a connection. Connection can be inherent. Inherence is a kind of connection. The threads, the cloth, inheres in the threads. The cloth is just threads sewn together. Take the threads away, you won't have any cloth anymore. So the cloth is connected in a very integral way with the threads. It's called inherence. That's a kind of connection, but it's there can be a looser kind of connection. Like the atoms in a molecule don't merge into one another, they're just connected. Maybe there's some electronic bonding, but they're just adjacent to one another. That's all. You look at an electron microscope, you'll see each atom is in its little place. They're still separate atoms. So that's just casual connection. Two things are touching each other or close to each other or in some other relationship. That's what I mean by casual connection, not integral connection, that one can't exist without the other. It just happened to be next to each other. Well, the Lord doesn't have that kind of qualities, casual qualities. Like you can take a clay pot and put a dye on it, glaze, and then cook the glaze in a hot oven, the color of the pot will change. You know, but that's a casual change. Krishna doesn't have such qualities. You can't inject or add or subtract qualities from him. Whatever qualities he has are integral to him, like the integral connection of the cloth and the threads. So he has no casual qualities, no casual connections with any qualities. And that's expressed by the phrase, free from material designations. That means no modifications. You can't change Krishna's color by painting him and then sticking him in an oven. You can't change his qualities. Whatever qualities he has, he always had and always will have. No modification. Okay. Taduktam. Vishuddha Gyana Murtaye, and also Vishuddha Vigyana Ganam Itya Dao Cha. This same idea that the Lord doesn't undergo any change because he doesn't have any temporary qualities is also said in the phrases. One of them is, my obeisances to him whose personal form is composed of pure consciousness. Anybody following this? What's the reference for that? For that statement? 1037. That's the verse, the chapter we read today. That's Narada Muni in 1037? Maybe. No, it may be. We read it this morning. Okay. And then the second statement, the concentrated embodiment of pure consciousness. And that's from where? Can't find it? Okay, anyway, also probably 10th canto. Where? Yeah, coming from where? 27th, and the next one? That we read this morning, just before breakfast. Okay. Tasmad. Mama nishita sharaya vibhidyamana twachi ityadikam tu mayaka lila varnanam eva. Therefore words like, his skin pierced by my sharp arrows. Who's talking here? Bhishma Dev. These are only descriptions of Krishna's illusory pastimes. He doesn't have blood. Yeah. He doesn't get cut, actually. That these pastimes might be real is contradicted by the reasoning presented in such statements as the following. Evam vadanti vajarshe rishayak kechanan vitaha yat swabhadracho virudyeta nanunam te smarantyuta ityadi nyayena vastavatva virodat. The statement is this is from the 12th canto, I think, spoken by Shukadev. Such is the account given by some sages, O wise king. But those who speak in this illogical way are contradicting themselves, having forgotten their own previous statements. This has to do with Shalvas attacking Dwarka and apparently killing Krishna's father. That's illusory. Sages may describe it as if it's real, but they don't know what they're talking about. Tatahi skande asangascha vyayo bedyo nigrahyo shoshya evacha vido svigachito badha iti vishnu pradrishyate asuran mohayan deva tridat yesha sureshvapi manushyan madhyaya drishtya namukteshu kadachana. It is similarly said in the Skanda Purana, Lord Vishnu has no connection with others. He is infallible and cannot be cut, dried, or subject to attack. But still he shows himself wounded, covered by blood, and tied up. To confuse the demons, the Lord thus plays among the demigods, appearing to humans as an average person. Those who are liberated, however, never see him in this way. That's the statement of the Skanda Purana. Jiva Goswami explains, iti Sri Bhishmasya yudha samaye daitya vishtat tata banam yuktam eveti. This means that only because the mind of Sri Bhishma was taken over by a demon during the battle could he speak like this. Kind vaduna dukswapna dukasyeva tasya nivedanam pritam iti gyeyam. We should understand, however, that now he is submitting his description like that of someone's misery experienced in a bad dream. Okay. Wow. Bhishma said that Krishna was bleeding because his mind was taken over by a demon. Jiva Goswami is saying this. But what he's describing is something like a bad dream. Wasn't real. Okay. That's what Jiva Goswami says. Commentary. Rice just harvested in the field is not edible. Have you ever tried it? To pick up rice in the field and eat it? It's because the grains are covered by husks. The act of threshing the rice removes the husks. And further, the further act of cooking the rice in boiling water makes the rice fit to offer to the Supreme Lord for his pleasure. Thus, modification can involve both physical and chemical changes. When you remove the husk, it's only a physical change. But it is a change. It's a modification. It's a physical modification. Take off like a pineapple. You take off the sharp points before you cut it up. When you're cutting it up, take off all the spikes. That's a physical modification.
We call the rice with the skin as paddy.
Yeah, but that's rice with the husks. Okay. In English, rice is only one word, rice. In all its phases, it's called rice. English is not describing a rice culture. But when you cook the rice, that's a chemical change. Adding water and heat actually changes the chemical composition of the rice. It becomes soft because the molecules rearrange. I don't know if there's any chemical reactions, but the molecules, there we are. Yeah, the cooking involves chemical reactions. Okay, they're both two different kinds of modification. Vikara. Vikara is not only chemical changes, it's also physical changes. And in all, well, let's take the questions at the end of the paragraph. And in all cases, some qualities of the modified object are removed to be replaced by substitute qualities. Sometimes the qualities or the substance changes, and sometimes it's a substitution. You put something in and maybe take something out. Like when you cook bindi, lady fingers, what do you call it in English? Okra. You have to take this, you should take, if you're cooking it for a sabji, take the slime off first, the grease, you know, the slimy stuff on the outside, and remove it. Otherwise, it doesn't taste nice. That's removing something or adding something. These are also vikaras. And since the perceived quality of things in this world are mostly perverted reflections of the hidden spiritual reality, they are not the real gunas of real objects, but only imagined qualities superimposed on imagined objects. The rice we harvest and cook for Krishna in this world is only a faint image of the real rice he enjoys in his eternal abode. No? Threshing the rice and cooking it involve removing upadis, material coverings, false identifications. But the Lord himself has no upadis covering him that can be removed, even when he's in this material world. And so he cannot be the object of any act of transformation, There's nothing to change in him. He's okay the way he is. There's no need to add something or subtract anything. There's no, you can't change him. You can't subject him to transformation. All his qualities and associations are non-different from him. His personal form embodies perfect pure consciousness. His place of residence and his devotees are also one in substance with him. Also his place and his devotees are non-different from him. Eternally unchanging. And the rice and other offerings we make to him, even if we have produced them by material transformations, become spiritual when he accepts them. We give Krishna something material, some material food, and he gives us some spiritual food in exchange. Okay, any questions now? Yes?
That was a tie.
Thank you. So, when Krishna is on this earth, it's really bewildering because he's got a spiritual body, and then sometimes he, for the bewilderment of the demons, he leaves the traces of material, like when he left behind this form. So, when, for example, the residents of Vrindavan touch Krishna or his devotees, when non-devotees touch, is it different? Like the one can touch Krishna only when he is a pure devotee.
Well, very often he doesn't let non-devotees touch him. Kaliyavana couldn't touch him. Sometimes he might allow a materialist to touch him. That materialist is likely to become transformed by that. Putana touched Krishna and she got turned into his pure devotee. It's possible that someone else could touch him and not be transformed. You know, because of having a a heart covered by stone, then Krishna's not really revealing himself. You don't catch Krishna just by touching him physically. He can not be there even when you touch him. Just like, who killed Dronacharya? Shikhandi killed Dronacharya? Drishtadyumna, that's the Shikhandi, same name. He was Drishtadyumna. Wait, Drishtadyumna. Yeah. Dronacharya. So, actually, Drishtadyumna couldn't kill him. He was already dead. He had already left his body by mystic meditation at that moment. So, it's like that. You can't touch Krishna. You may go right up to him and grab him, but then he's not there anymore. You know, you may think he's there, but he just leaves a material body or disappears. So unless he wants to, you can't really touch him. And if you really touch him, you'll be transformed. Okay. All right, let's read the last, before we deal with the other things, let's read the last short paragraph. Shukadev spoke the verse beginning Evam Vadanti Rajarshe. These sages talk like this, that Krishna's father was actually killed by Shalva, but they don't know what they're talking about. Shukadev spoke this to Parikshit in the context of Shalva's attack on Dwarka. At a crucial point in the battle, Shalva resorted to illusion, trying to bewilder Krishna with a show of murdering his father Vasudev. Krishna seemed to be momentarily fooled by the illusion, but only in the view of less intelligent observers. A sage who has identified Krishna as the supreme truth contradicts himself if he suggests that Krishna could ever become bewildered. You can't say both. Either you believe in Krishna or you don't. Where's self? Yeah, I'll fix it. Lowercase himself. Okay, now any comments or questions? Yes, Sarvika Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. I'm trying to understand the logic behind this. given up all these upadhas. So everything which is there in this material world is actually not material energy. It's originally spiritual energy, which is covered by lust, by our desire to enjoy it. So when we remove this lust, this desire to enjoy, we can offer this to and also everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. So it seems that to free from upadhas means that we have to use this energy in Krishna's service. And for example, in the case of rice, we have to
there's two different logics here. Uh-huh. There's the material logic and the spiritual logic. You can't merge the two together. They work differently. This description of the process of vikara, transformation, is a material process. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about the living entity becoming an ecstatic pure devotee. That's a spiritual transformation. The dynamics of it is different. You can't apply the material laws of physics to spiritual dynamics. So you have to take the husk off of rice, and then you also have to cook it. You have to remove the hardness, which is hardness is not an inseparable quality of rice. Rice, in fact, doesn't serve its purpose as long as it's hot. Hard, you can't eat it. Can't offer it to Krishna. But you remove the husk, and then you chemically, or by cooking, remove the hardness. That's removing upadhis. But in the spiritual, you can say also removing the upadhis of the living entity transforms them. That's sort of similar.
Well, what I was thinking about is that it's not enough to just remove husk and to cook this rice. We have to also apply our bhakti while offering to Krishna so that he would accept it.
Yes. Well, to make it into prasadam. Mm-hmm. I just added that. What the material process involves is making it into edible cooked rice. Mm-hmm. People are eating it without offering it. To make it edible. But to transform it spiritually, you have to go another step. You have to offer it to Krishna. Mm-hmm. You have to make it suitable and then offer it.
So it seems that we have two levels of upadhas, like material upadhas, which are necessary in order to make it edible, and then spiritual upadhas means false ego desire to enjoy this rice,
yeah,
so that we could offer it to Krishna.
Yeah. The material process involves changing material qualities. Mm-hmm. Spiritual process involves removing the obstacles to our connection with Krishna. Mm-hmm. That's the upadhas of the jiva.
I'm asking that because you mentioned in the commentary that the rice which we have in this material world is like an image or shadow of that rice which Krishna enjoys in the spiritual world.
Yes.
So in order to make him take this rice, you have to apply something external like bhakti in order to
right.
He could accept it for us.
But I don't think you have to husk the rice in the spiritual world or cooks it's cooked already.
Yeah.
You can just offer it right on the spot, as it is. Mm. It's already suitable to offer. Normally, the change that the living entity has to undergo to become fit as a devotee of Krishna is not usually described as vikara. In fact, avikara uchite. The soul is called avikarya. It can't be changed. It's called shodhanam, vishuddha. The soul becomes purified. So the same description isn't given. We're talking about souls, removing the upadhis of souls. We don't call that transformation. We call that purification. It's a different dynamic, although there's a similarity, but it's a different process. Because the soul doesn't change.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
We hear, like today morning we discussed about the rasas. One of the rasas is that chivalry
yes.
So when talking about Bhishma Dev seeing Krishna in that wounded and
yes.
He's getting that ecstasy and we are reading in the second
yes.
Bhagavatam also glorifying a relation between a pure devotee and Supreme Lord.
Yes.
So if and we hear, we are also reading the commentary and the text here, that Krishna makes such things in order to bewilder the demons. But also there is a realm, yes, of rasa here,
yes,
which is based on reality. So how will reconcile that this is...
Well, we have to separate the two. Bhishma may be technically wrong when he says that Krishna was bleeding, that he was wounded. Krishna can't be wounded. He was technically wrong. On the level of tattva, he was an illusion. And you can explain that illusion by the fact that he was, you know, became like a demon on the battlefield. But on the level of bhava, of ecstasy, he was perfectly right. You know, to be experiencing that chivalrous emotion. The bhava is appropriate, but what he said was technically wrong. Many examples of ecstatic devotees saying things that are just not technically correct, but for the ecstasy, they're appropriate.
So Krishna is putting a drama, or is really happening? Like his body cannot give blood and all those things.
Well, he can show blood, but he can't be wounded. His body can't be damaged.
He's not like a drama or something.
Yeah, it's just a drama. Drama is a matter of ecstasy. Even though everybody in the audience knows that it's not real blood, it's just ketchup, you know, on the stage, still they're feeling very excited to see the drama. You know, it's an illusion. I know it's an illusion. But still, they get great pleasure and excitement from it.
When Mother Yashoda is chasing Krishna, is it Krishna was not really fearful, or is it...
Yeah, if somebody thinks, that what are you doing, committing such an offense against God, making him afraid? And everybody would hate Mother Yashoda for it. But they know that you can't really terrify God, that it's only out of love that God, you know, pretends to be terrified.
I'm asking, as Krishna, as a personality, is he really fearful or not fearful in that pastime?
He feels the fear. That's his ecstasy, to feel that fear. He acts as a baby, and he wants to feel the things that babies feel. What's the use of taking a baby body if you're going to feel and think like an adult? He wants to feel and think like a baby and play the role.
So in this context, is it when Krishna was getting that blood, is it the same, like he's really feeling, or he's just like,
Krishna is playing the chivalrous role. Two warriors opposing one another on the battlefield, him and Bhishma. So if one of them gets scratched and starts bleeding, he doesn't panic. Oh, I'm bleeding. Let me out of here. You know, a Kshatriya won't be upset by the blood anyway. But what Krishna is feeling is the ecstasy of a good fight. Okay.
Thank you.
We have to stop. I'm sorry, we went on too long. We shouldn't do this. Okay. We'll stop here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Okay. Here.